Which is again a very important study, I think. Kieran and Gerd have sent the non-motor questionnaire out to over 10,000 patients, and this is a large report. Here you see patients in this light color are those below 1 year of duration. This is greater than 10 years. And you can see already patients below 1 year, they have urinary problems, memory issues, depression, cardiovascular problems, and also miscellaneous, which largely involves pain. On this side, if you look at the percentage of patients experiencing non-motor symptoms, this is below 45 years, greater than 85 years. Some symptoms are more common in the younger onset. Memory issues, for instance, depression, for instance, problems with autonomic function, sleep disorders. These seem to be more prevalent in the younger onset Parkinson's than the older onset Parkinson's. This is a Belgian study we recently published. Similar sort of figures. These are the different Honeyer stages. This is stage one. Even at stage one, you can see some non-motor symptoms. Again, urinary symptoms, problem with sexual function, problems with depression and memory are prevalent right at the beginning of Parkinson's. Many of my neurology colleagues would tell me, oh, non-motor symptoms only occur in the advanced stages of Parkinson's. Well, that's clearly not true. It's the profile of non-motor symptoms that's different between early and late Parkinson's. Now, this is rather a thought-provoking paper. I think this is our paper, and this is came from the US, where we show that in spite of the importance, non-motor symptoms continue to be neglected in clinical practice. Lisa Shulman and colleagues showed that 40% of consultations in the USA never discuss any non-motor symptoms. The neurologists just talk about motor symptoms. We wanted to look at that in a European framework. We administered the non-motor questionnaire. When they ticked yes, the patients, we asked them, have you discussed it with your doctor or your nurse before? There were 240 patients across several centers, very busy slides. But I'd just like to point out something, that 42.8% of the whole sample had positive non-motor symptoms, had never discussed their symptoms with their doctors or nurses before the questionnaire was administered. Examples here, 50% had problems with dizziness, 52% had problems with daytime sleepiness, 52.4%, and around 41% here had problems of REM behavior disorder, for instance. These were never discussed. Now, if you don't discuss it, you're not going to treat it. Is that true? Well, this slide shows these are the different non-motor symptoms. These are the percentage undeclared. All of these are potentially treatable. None of these were treated before the non-motor questionnaire was administered. This is across Europe, many centers in the UK, some of them really big teaching centers with movement disorder specialists. So if we pause to think, none of these symptoms were treated prior to NMS questions, even in major PD centers. I think we need to repeat this study perhaps to see whether our practicing habits have changed. But this again highlights why and how some areas, non-motor symptoms, continue to be marginalized. And here is an example. This is a non-motor questionnaire, a real-life one. This is somebody I saw day before yesterday. The patient's completed it. He scored 5 out of 30. So there are 30 items, and he's ticked 5 yes, and there is a score. We consider that mild, and this patient has Parkinson's for about 12 years. So he has what we would think a dominantly motor disorder. Here is another example. This patient presented to me for the first time on that clinic, so it's his first presentation where the diagnosis was made. He scored 19 out of 30. And this is at his presentation. He's untreated. He has a Honeyer score of only 2. If we didn't do that, we would probably give him a small dose of levodopa or a dopamine agonist and send him home and say, come back in 3 or 6 months or whatever. But several of the symptoms, perhaps swallowing issue, dribbling of saliva, sexual problems, depression, as well as some of the sleep problems, need treating. Because when you ask, his family and the patient are bothered about that more than the very mild tremor that he has. And that again highlights why declaration of non-motor symptoms are so important, and it's very important to empower our patients to declare these symptoms to us. And I'd just like to stay on with that, with a very recent proposal that we've started, in spite of quite strong criticism from some quarters. We've suggested that we should classify our patients like we do with the motor staging, now with the non-motor staging, and this could go from no non-motor symptoms, zero, to very severe, which is four. So you can have a motor staging at the same time a non-motor staging, very simply done based on this cutoff scores that you can see
there.
What is the importance of this? Well, what we have established is there are several phenotypes within Parkinson's. In other words, not one size fits all. When you have somebody with Parkinson's in front of you, they'll express the non-motor symptoms in various different ways. An analogy will be some patients with Parkinson's have tremor. 30% do not have tremor. They have more motor expressions, akinesia dominant. Others have mainly balance problem. So we've classified the motor phenotypes. We never really looked at the non-motor phenotypes. We think there are the six types. This might expand in future. Park cognitive, park depression and anxiety, park sleep, park pain, park fatigue, park autonomic. Using the scale and the analysis that I showed you, the classification, you can do this in the clinic in a matter of few minutes, this classification.